Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Have people always collected things? And if so, why? And where's the line between a harmless hobby and an obsession? James Del Burgo is the author of A Noble Madness, The Dark Side of Collecting from Antiquity to Now. Good afternoon, James.
Good afternoon. Nice to be with you.
As far back in history as is known, have people always collected things?
People have always collected, going back to the ancient world. Probably the big difference from today is who did the collecting. In the ancient world, it was Roman emperors. In the pre-modern period, it was kings and queens and aristocrats. And then after the 19th century into the 20th and today, a great democratization took place. So people have always collected, but what's changed is who has done the collecting and why.
The why I'm interested in. Can the reasons vary?
Well, the reasons certainly do vary. I think the important thing that is part of the story I'm telling in the history that I've done is that there has always been a worry about collecting, that maybe the love of things was dangerous rather than a good thing.
Right. Okay. Is that a view that was commonly shared in all parts of the world?
One of the interesting things I found is that some of the earliest, most interesting ideas about why people collect comes from China in the 16th century. It seems that in China, the first people to think deeply about collecting said essentially two things about collecting. Collecting was a form of sophistication, and it was also a form of obsession. And the interesting thing about this way of thinking about collecting flowers or collecting antiques or collecting calligraphy scrolls was that people argued it was a form of increasing sophistication, but it was also a dangerous form of obsession. If you like, in a way, it became good to be obsessed about something so much that you collected it.
So tell us about Thomas Phillips. Perhaps that's an example of when it does become a bit dangerous.
Well, Thomas Phillips was a 19th century heir to an industrial fortune in the north of England. And Thomas Phillips inherited his father's money, and he became obsessed with the idea of collecting, as he put it, I want to collect one copy of every single book in the world. He became completely obsessed with the collection of books and manuscripts and was a wonderful collector and used his money well. He would go to auctions and outbid the British Museum. And so he became really the greatest single collector of certainly of books and manuscripts in the Victorian era. But he also had terrible relationships with his family. He trusted no one with his collections. He was not in the end able to bequeath them to a museum because he simply couldn't bring himself to trust anybody else with his great collection. So in the end, they became, over time, dispersed through many different auctions. But I think the interesting fact about Sir Thomas Phillips was the way in which everybody else in the world, including his family, became in a way his enemy because he saw his greatest devotion to his collection.
Right. That was, that's where obviously where it does turn into obsession to the extent where the things in his life seems to have become more important than the people in his life.
Well, there's the famous story also from the 1970s, as you might remember, in Rome, where the great American tycoon and collector John Paul Getty's grandson was kidnapped. And the kidnappers in Rome demanded a ransom. And the initial response of Getty was not to want to pay the ransom because he was not convinced that it was the right thing to do. The idea was that he cared more about money. He cared more about his possessions than even the members of his family. So there is a great and long tradition of people who are monsters because they love things and money more than people. That goes back to ancient Rome. It continues today.
Yeah. And is it fair to say that collectors, whether they become completely obsessional about it or they're just extremely keen, that they feel their collection says something about them?
Well, this is another fascinating idea. And I wonder the degree to which we believe this today. In the 19th century, in the Victorian era, in the Romantic era, that is actually when people started to see collections as portraits of individuals. Why do you collect ceramic hedgehogs? Why do you collect models of ancient Greek temples? It must say something about you as a person. That idea really started in the 19th century. It was really deepened by Freud and psychoanalysis and the followers of psychoanalysis who thought the collections people owned were windows onto their souls. But today, I think we inherit that idea. I'm not sure how many of us still believe that, for two reasons. One is, these days, collectors of all kinds of objects are very canny investors. We used to ask, oh, what does this say if you collect Liberace dolls or goldfish bowls that come from Wales? What does that say about you? Now, today, I think we'd say, oh, well, maybe there's a market for that. Maybe this is a canny investment. In other words, it's not strange, and it's not necessarily about you as a person. It might be about you as an investor. The other thing I'll quickly add there is that if we were 100 years ago, we would be versed in Freud. Freudianism dominated popular culture, films about collectors, novels about collectors. Collecting, according to Freud, was, if you like, the love of the object instead of the love of the person. It was a manifestation of repressed romantic sexual longing. You could own a statue. Maybe you couldn't get a girlfriend, but you could own a statue. It was a substitute. We, of course, don't believe in Freud in the way we used to. And more recently, people have been submitting people who are collectors and also hoarders to brain scans and brain analysis. And there's an argument that encephalograms show us that there are distinctive features to the human brain that are a little bit different in people with a strong collecting urge. So the other reason I think that we have backed away a little bit from seeing a collection as an embodiment of somebody's innermost identity is that on the one hand, there's the money question, and on the other hand, it's more of a hard science argument that we're all a little hardwired to collect. So it's not that unusual. There's something basically human about this urge.
Yeah. Is it perhaps, I mean, could there be something in the idea that it's an attempt to put order on a chaotic world, that you're taking things and you're cataloguing them and putting them in an order and keeping them clean?
I think that's always been a profound impulse and perception about collecting. Of course, the trouble comes is when you collect too much and you stuff your house too much and your house collapses yes. Or you can't get through the door. So then the interesting thing is that order turns back into chaos. So it's these two impulses, I think, are always chasing each other in the way we see collecting. For example, let's say you're married to someone who spends a lot of money on collecting something that you don't think is really worth it. Is that the pursuit of order, or is it the pursuit of madness and financial ruin? That's another theme that comes up a lot in the history of collecting.
James, thank you very much for speaking with us today. That was James Del Borgo, the professor of history at Rutgers University and the author of A Noble Madness, The Dark Side of Collecting from Antiquity to Now.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.